even though one may be greatly qualified in the mundane advancements of arts or science. Shukadev Goswami is praying from the Lord by dint of being inspired from within by the Lord, so that he could rightly explain the facts and figures of creation as inquired by Maharaj Parikshit. The spiritual master is not a theoretical speculator like the mundane scholar, but is Kshatriyam Brahmanishtam. May the Lord, who in the beginning of the creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, be pleased with me. This purport by Srila Prabhupada is mostly a discussion of prachodita, which he translates as inspiration. The Sanskrit word has the sense of something that arouses or impels you into action, animates you, gets you going, gives you the impetus, the desire to do something. So this character of inspiration, in English, when somebody is inspired, suddenly it seems as if from nowhere they get an idea or a thought. Sometimes it's a thought and sometimes it's an action. The Sanskrit definitely has the idea of action into it, but it's also, as you can see, it has content as a conception. Inspiration happens when there's creative work to be done, and suddenly someone gets the idea how to do this work. You suddenly see the solution to the problem. It says that when the composer Mozart composed the symphony, right at the beginning, the whole symphony would just appear in his mind, complete. It's not like he put it together. It just showed up. So this is also something of the idea of inspiration. So notice here, now we're talking here about the Shukadev Goswami is praying for inspiration from the Lord so that from within his heart he may enable him, give him the potency to correctly answer Maharaj Parikshit's question about creation. Therefore he remembers how in the beginning the creation also took place by such an act of inspiration from Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was sitting on the lotus flower and had from within an urge to create or an urge to do something, but didn't have the knowledge how to go about it. And after being initiated by the Lord, hearing the words tappa, tappa, which are directions from the outside, and following those directions, then he was filled with what Prabhupada calls here potent knowledge. And Brahma is therefore known as Veda Garbha, impregnated with the Vedas. As Prabhupada has explained in this purport, the Vedas are already there. They come out of the mouth of Brahma. They appear in this world from the mouth of Brahma, but they were there before Brahma. And actually, were given to him by the Lord. With the Vedas, he knew how to proceed with the creation of the universe because all the blueprints are in the Vedas. Usually, when a scientist describes the world, tries to describe the world or understand it, they look at the world and try to figure out what's going on. The Vedas came first, however, it's the reverse direction. It's not that somebody looked at the world and tried to explain it with the Vedas. It was just the opposite. The Vedas are first and the world was created on the basis of the Vedas. They precede the world. Therefore, their accuracy is beyond question. The world fits, and the Vedas, they fit together, because the Vedas are the directions. Because the creation comes and goes, but the Vedas stay, and every time the creation is put back together again, it's on the basis of the Vedas. So this potent knowledge, it was given to Brahma, says, from within his hridi, it appears in his heart. So it seems like it just comes from inside. You don't see who the speaker is, but actually the Lord is in the heart. That's why Prabhupada begins by talking about Supersoul. The Lord is in the heart of every living being. And he supplies the inspiration for action for every living being. So that when a creature is born, he probably says this potent knowledge, he's saying here, he's talking about, seems to be living beings in general. Whatever we seem to know disappears at the time of death. It's stripped off of us. Now this loss of knowledge at the time of death is not really anything but a kind of forgetting. Then you're again embodied, and then there's this potent knowledge is again inspired by the Lord from within the heart of every living being, and it is known as the awakening of knowledge, for it is comparable to the awakening from sleep or unconsciousness. So when a living being comes into the world, there is an inspiration to act in a certain way. That impulse is provided, is not automatic or a material interaction. It's from the Supersoul. It's from the Supersoul. In other words, the cause, ultimately, why a particular living entity is in this grade of life, or in the human species, are different. People have different characters and qualities. They're inspired to act. And actually, they're inspired to act according to their past good and bad deeds. You don't know why you have a murderous rage, even when you're 3 years old, but you're inspired to act on your murderous rage. Where did that come from? It's because of your karma. Or you're inspired always when you see somebody in distress, you feel distress and have this inspiration to help them. You're just like that. And very early in life, these things are there. Nobody knows how you learned it. It's just there. This is awakened in the heart of the living being by the Lord. This doesn't happen just through material nature. There's this other factor. When in the Bhagavad Gita, there are five factors of action are described. One of them is daiva. This is it. Daiva. Daiva from deva. Daiva means, Prabhupada translates it, the unseen hand of the Supreme, sometimes known as fate or destiny. So sometimes you see people are inspired in different ways. Sometimes they're inspired to be stupid. I saw a film once, true. It was from an amateur camera. There's a park in America, Yellowstone National Park, and in these parks, they're roaming around free are these very large bears called grizzly bears. When they stand on their hind legs, they're usually over 6 feet tall. They're very strong. And they tell you they're dangerous, and if they come up to your car, don't get out, and so on. They beg, people feed them, and so this was some vacation, or this was filmed from his movie camera. He was in a car, and there's a bear, and he gets out. And it's a movie camera that has records too. So you can hear his wife say, "Sammy, get back in the car, get back in the car." But you see this camera advance toward this grizzly bear, and you see the bear stand up and come toward the camera, and the guy keeps filming. Sam, and then all of a sudden the bear gets close, and then the picture gets all blurry and everything like that. And then from another person's camera, obviously, you see this bear walking off into the woods with his mouth all bloody and everything like that. And you see this camera, you see that at least my instinct when I saw this is that Krishna made him stupid. It was time to die. And Krishna made him stupid. You could hear the voice, his wife or somebody, "Get in the cars, come here." And here's this big bear standing up, and he's still photographing. That has to be supernatural. So people are acting this. They don't know why they want to do something. They have an impulse. That's another, prachodita means an impulse to action. Where it comes from, they don't know. So in other words, this feature of the super soul, which is called intelligence, buddhi, working as the intelligence, is actually working in every living being, in ordinary ways. Even insects and the animals, they are also inspired to do what they do. And Prabhupada says, as already discussed herein before, that's a couple of verses back where the Lord is mentioned as Dhyampati, Dhyampati. D means intelligence, and he's the director of intelligence, the controller of all intelligence. This is the supersoul feature. So Prabhupada explains, I'm back on page 223 now, the purport to text 20. Living beings are proportionately endowed with intelligence in terms of their previous activities. All living beings are not equally endowed with the same quality of intelligence because behind such development of intelligence is the control of the Lord, as declared in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15. As Paramatma, Supersoul, the Lord is living in everyone's heart, and from him only does one's power of remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness follow. Matasmitir jnanam apohanam cha. One person can sharply remember past activities by the grace of the Lord, while others cannot. One is highly intelligent by the grace of the Lord, and one is a fool by the same control. Therefore, the Lord is Dhyanpati, or the Lord of intelligence. So Prabhupada's picking up on this same theme in this verse when we're talking about being inspired. So after reviewing how this happens, this characteristic of being awakened to activities and knowledge by the Lord, this happens in the very first instance of creation with Brahma, who's Aja. The word Aja means literally not born, unborn. That is to say, he doesn't come out of a womb, but he comes from this lotus grown from the navel of the Lord, and he doesn't have a mundane father and mother. So his birth is unusual because he's the very first one. So therefore he's called Aja, the first created being. And he is inspired by the Lord to create subsequent to the main creation by the Lord. Because there's two creations. They're called Sarga. Sarga comes from this verb, Shristi. What's the verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Krishna says, every millennium I send myself forth. It's the same verb. I can't remember the verse now. Shristi. The idea of creation, of Shristi, is that you're sending something out. You know, it's not like you just make something out there, but actually something comes out from and you send forth. So it's called Sarga. The first creation is Sarga, which is the creation of the 24 basic elements of creation. This is described in more detail in the third canto by Kapila Dev, how the Sarga takes place. First there's the Mahatattva, then it's energized by the time energy, and false ego appears. The whole thing is false ego, the whole creation is false ego appears, and there's false ego and goodness, passion and ignorance, and then out of those everything is created. That's the Sarga. Then the next is Visarga, the next creation, and that's the work of Brahma. That's why he says he creates after the creation of the Lord. He's the secondary creator. You notice the Bible begins with Brahma. In Genesis, those things that are described in the activities of God, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, and he divided the waters from the land and the night from the day. In the beginning. Not quite, really. Actually, the activities of Lord Brahma are described there. So everyone is working here under the behind the scenes. There's the Lord, who's not only inspiring the activities of the living beings, but also controlling the external energy. Remember, as Krishna explains, this two rivers flow together. It's called a confluence. So the material world is created when there's two energies are in confluence. The first is the separated material energy, which is controlled by the Lord, and the next are the jivas. And the jivas are controlled by the Lord through this agency of intelligence as the supersoul. And they're put together, these two. And then out of these two energies coming together, the world arises. Everything here comes from these two energies. Krishna says, both these energies come from me, and mata parataram nanyat kinchit asti. And beyond me, there's nothing more. That's it. That's the picture of what there is. So, the Vedic knowledge was first impregnated within Brahma. The word impregnated is there because he's called Vedagarbha, impregnated with the Vedas. And it appears that Brahma distributed the Vedic knowledge. Well, sure, it's called the Brahma Sampradaya. He not only makes the world, but because he makes the world for the purpose of the creation is to reclaim fallen souls. Also, he participates in that reclamation project by his Brahma Sampradaya. And book distribution begins with Brahma's distribution of Vedic knowledge. Prabhupada says somewhere that we are known as the Sampradaya of the book. Sometimes when you see Brahma depicted, he has the book in his hand. Of course, in a way, it wasn't written down for a long time. But anyway, you get the idea. He has the Vedas in his hand in the form of a palm leaf manuscript. So that's why our particular job is for production and distribution of literature. So he speaks the Vedas, but as Prabhupada said, he was inspired by the Lord. Before the creation, the Lord was there, Narayana paro avyaktat. He's prior to the unmanifest. And therefore the words spoken by the Lord are vibrations of transcendental sound. You understand, there's no material sound yet. It's not created. So when the Lord speaks, when the Vedas are there in the form of words and speech, that's spiritual sound. Then Prabhupada says there's a gulf of difference between the two qualities of sound, namely prakrita, that's prakriti but with a long A, prakrita, of the nature of prakriti, of material nature, and aprakrita, non-material. The physicist can only deal with the prakrita sound, or sound vibrated in the material sky, where that sound is the first of the gross elements, is sound, and then from that sound comes space is produced, because it proceeds from subtle to gross. But first there's sound. See, each of the gross elements has the different objects of perception. Sound is the object of perception of hearing. So first there's sound, and then space appears. And then what happens is from the interaction and the potent and the zap being zapped by the Lord, then the objects of the sense of touch appear, like rough, smooth, heavy, light, things we perceive by the sense of touch, and air. Air has two, space only has the object of sound. Air has sound and the objects of the sense of touch. The next gross element, fire, has those two plus form. Then the next, water, has those three plus flavors, taste, things that you taste. And then finally earth, all those, plus the things that you can smell. This is how it goes from subtle to gross. But it evolves out of, first of all, sound. That sound is the first, but it's a material element. It comes out of false ego in ignorance. There's false ego in goodness, passion, and ignorance. From false ego in goodness, the mind and the demigods come out. In the passion, the senses and the intelligence comes out. And then in ignorance, the sense objects and the gross elements come out. So basically, this sound is really proceeds out of false ego and ignorance. So that's mundane sound. So what is that sound that's prior to that? Before there isn't any material creation. So he says there's a gulf of difference. The physicist can deal only with the Prakriti sound, or sound vibrated in the material sky, and therefore we must know that the Vedic sounds recorded in symbolic expressions cannot be understood with anyone in the universe, by anyone in the universe, unless and until one is inspired by the vibration of supernatural aprakata sound, which descends in the chain of the disciplic succession from the Lord to Brahma, from Brahma to Narada, from Narada Vyasa, and so on. Interesting, huh? In other words, you may pick up the paperback edition of the Vedas somewhere, or you may even read it in Sanskrit at some university, but what you perceive is not spiritual sound. You can't understand it, because you yourself have to be inspired by the supernatural sound, which descends in disciplic succession. See, the point of disciplic succession is not just to hand down a text generation after generation, as though sometimes people think that the Lord speaks and somebody hears and repeats exactly as he said, who repeats exactly as he said. That's the external aspect of it. What's really happening is there's the supernatural sound is conveyed. You have to be inspired by that sound. So what does this mean to be inspired, huh? Well, first he says, no mundane scholar can translate or reveal the true import of the Vedic mantras. So they may be students of the Vedas. They know more Sanskrit and they know the Vedas better than most of us. They have a facility for language, maybe. They study it very hard. And they can quote chapter and verse. And Prabhupada was having this correspondence with this professor, Fritz Stahl, at Berkeley, J.F. Stahl. He's originally from the Netherlands. He was quoting all the different commentators on the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra and the Bhagavad Gita with Prabhupada. Prabhupada said it's like two lawyers, they're both using the same law books. So he knew them. He knew them quite well. And in fact, he was upset that Stahl was a little disappointed that when he met devotees, they didn't know them. And he was happy that when he got Prabhupada, they could discuss this on a higher level, as he put it. Prabhupada's saying the mundane scholars can't understand this, and this is the reason, because they have not been inspired by this transcendental sound. Now let's look at the next sentence. They cannot be understood, that is, the Vedas, the Vedic mantras, they cannot be understood unless one is inspired or initiated. Now, the word initiate in English means also to begin, in other words, to start some activity. When they launch rockets, you know, into space, they say, initiate the launch sequence. You know, the 10-9. It's also called initiate. So he says inspired or initiated. By the authorized spiritual master, the original spiritual master is the Lord himself. In other words, when he speaks to Brahma, that is initiation, which is the same thing as inspiration. And the succession comes down to the sources of parampara, as clearly stated in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So parampara, the point of parampara is that it conveys the supernatural inspiration or potent knowledge or internal potency, which is described technically as a combination of the chit shakti and the hladini shakti. This energy, the supernatural internal potency, comes, and then the devotee can understand. And these are the instructions in the Vedas, in the Svetasvatara Upanishad, the very last text. Yasya devi para bhaktir yata deve tathai gurau tasyaite katita hyaritam prakashante mahatmanaha. It's interesting, this is the last text because it refers to these discussions. These katha. That means the Upanishad that you have just studied, the import, the artha means purport, the meaning, the purport of these discussions can be understood only by that Mahatma who has not understood. It says prakashante, it shines forth. Actually, it shines forth. You are illuminated. Sometimes inspiration is described as being illuminated in religious circles. He's illuminated from within, lit up. The meaning is lit up only for those great souls who have para bhakti, pure devotion to the Deva, to the Lord, and also Guru. And the same as just as to the Lord, also to the Guru. These are the qualifications. Then they shine forth. Otherwise, you have no access. You may be a scholar, you may study like crazy, but you will not actually really experience the transcendental sound that's coming down. And then Prabhupada quotes, so unless one receives the transcendental knowledge from the authorized parampara, one should be considered useless. Well, it says your mantras are useless. Prabhupada says one is, if your mantras are useless, then you're useless also. And this is from the Padma Purana Sampradaya, Viniha mantras. Ye nishpalam. He says here, sometimes Prabhupada says vishpala mataha, and sometimes nishpala. It means fruitless. Pala is fruit. There's no result. They don't do anything. You say your mantra, and plump, just flops down there dead. It doesn't do anything. No potency. It's fruitless. Your mantras are considered useless. So it's either sometimes nishpala, vipala, but maybe even the Upanishads, maybe the Padma Purana, some texts say nish and some texts say vi, but it's the same. Even though one may be greatly qualified in the mundane advancements of art or science. So this is why Prabhupada's approach is not the scholarly approach. That's why he says such things like that upsets them greatly, like Bhagavad Gita as it is. They think that, how can it be that this saying, of course it changes, everything changes over the course of time. You say as it is, but we know as it is because if the Bhagavad Gita is heard in disciplic succession, the reader or hearer of Bhagavad Gita, because Super Soul is in his heart, he has the same experience that Arjuna has on the battle of Kurukshetra. What Krishna says to Arjuna is exactly also what the Super Soul says to the living entity here. And the same instructions are given to us by the same Lord. And we are also in some perplexity how to surrender to Krishna. And also he inspires us how to act. Tadami buddhi yogam tam. I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. That's how you understand the Bhagavad Gita. It's potent. If one is reading the Bhagavad Gita without the slightest desire or inclination to come to Krishna, doesn't receive it in disciplic succession, nothing's going to happen. It just, because these books are not just things, they're relationships. And the text is in a context. And you take it out of the context, you've got something else. It's like when Ravana stole Sita. He was trying to get the internal potency of the Lord, but he got Maya Sita. He gets Maya instead. As soon as you try to separate the Lord's energy from the Lord, you get a fake. You get a counterfeit. So these scholars, they may be reading the Vedas, but actually they have a kind of Maya Veda, like Maya Sita. Looks like it, but it's not there. Like Ravana, you get death, you don't get eternal life, you don't get Sita. So this is how this takes place in our sampradaya. Of course, and our initiation with the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to begin with, it says that's also an initiation into the Vedas. All the Vedas are in those syllables. After all, when you chant japa, every time you chant one mantra on a bead, that's the equivalent to studying one Upanishad. And it is. It really is. And we also get, when we are initiated, we get the mantra and an order. See, the inspiration is also like an order. So there's an order given by the spiritual master. How to chant this mantra, how to be act in a certain way, so that the potency will act. Because for the spiritual potency to flow, one has to be receptive. It cannot be blocked. So to become receptive means that the instructions are given. So therefore, you have to become a qualified hearer and be in the right relationship with the spiritual master by following the order. I mean, the initiation is an order. So you have to receive the initiation. It not only has to be given, but has to be received. One has to accept the order. And therefore, it forms the basis of my activities. So that's why the Lord is first manifest to it as the spiritual master, externally. Then by following the order of the spiritual master, then as by a kind of sympathetic vibration, we can all start to also hear the instruction of the Lord in the heart. The instructions are the same. The Lord is acting from within of the heart and also externally from us. They're complete harmony. So that the inspiration from the heart, the instructions from the spiritual master, what we read in the Shastra, it's all to the same point. And therefore, one knows how to act in such a way that the purposes of the Lord are carried out. You become nimitra matram. You become the instrument of Krishna. This is all useful instruction for us here. Any questions, comments? Yeah.
So is it that all Jesus actually had all the leaders as far as that they actually know all the leaders?
They have the capacity. A jiva, when he's fully developed, has the capacity to receive 78%. After that, you can't go any further. So it doesn't mean that you have 78%, but the capacity, when you arrive at the human form of life, and you actually live a human form of life, because the actual human form of life means civilized life. Civilized life means Vedic culture. Vedic culture means you hear the Vedas, and then you can develop 78%. They do. Because I'm trying to remember now the passages where nectar devotion. Where this is described is the Lord has 64 qualities or characteristics, and therefore a living entity can get 50 of those. Then Lord Shiva has more, and so on. And then Krishna has certain himself's characteristics that nobody else has. That's where it's discussed there. Here Prabhupada translates this into knowledge as a parallel thing. It seems to me that it's just characteristic of the living entity, because no one can have, no matter how great you are, liberated Goloka Vrindavan, you're still not going to have the knowledge that Krishna has. You'll always be behind. Neither are you even interested. Is any inhabitants of Braj interested in creating a universe? No. They're happy to know that Krishna does it as a kind of hobby on the side, while his real thing is playing with them. They're not interested either. Okay. Yeah, if Krishna wants to give them the capacity, sure. Not they'll never have the capacity Krishna has. He can make them into a Brahma. He can make them into so many different ways. He can empower them in so many different ways. But Krishna, no one is equal and no one is greater. I take no one to mean no one. You better stop now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.